Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. Our world is changing with accelerating speed as knowledge, technology, economic structures, and human beings interact. There are now 7 billion of us on our planet, 7,000 million human souls. In this new world, new problems and opportunities arise, and new questions. One is this: with such rapid change, does higher education, let's say a 4-year college degree, still matter? Does it help a young person navigate, succeed, pursue happiness? Does it help the community, the state, the nation, who've helped to pay the rising cost? Royce Engstrom has some thoughts. He's president of the University of Montana. Royce, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Brian, thank you for having me. It's good to be here and enjoy the opportunity for conversation.
Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Brian, I grew up in Nebraska, mostly. I spent a few years early on in Michigan, but essentially I grew up in Nebraska. My dad was in the trucking business. He was on the sales and service side of that industry and kind of a self-made man, came out of World War II as a mechanic and eventually ended up owning his own small business. And so he and my mom worked that business together, and it was a great upbringing for me. I learned a great deal about work ethic from my parents.
I was going to ask you what you took from that as you look back on it that still influences your life today.
Yeah, my dad was a very hardworking fellow, as was my mother. So first and foremost, I learned the value of hard work. Neither of them had a college education. I'm a first-generation college student myself, but they always appreciated and supported me and my movement in that direction. They didn't always understand what I was taking in college, but they were always interested in hearing about it, and so I very much appreciated the support they gave me.
What did you study in college and why?
Well, I was a chemistry major in college. In high school, I gravitated toward the sciences, but I wasn't really sure what aspect of that I would go into. For a while, I was thinking about medical school, veterinary school. I really got turned on to physics as a high school senior, and I credit both my high school teacher but also some professors at the nearby college for having us over and talking to us about physics and so on. When I got to college, one of the first courses I took was chemistry, and I just really enjoyed it, really liked it. And so some of my professors got me involved in undergraduate research at a pretty early age, and that really was what grabbed me. And so from a fairly early point in college, I realized that I wanted to go to graduate school and probably wanted to have an academic career of some sort.
How do you end up going from that interest in science, obviously pretty in-depth interest, to administrative work in higher education?
Turns out it was a pretty natural progression. As a faculty member, as a chemistry faculty member, I had quite an active research program and always had anywhere from 6 to 12 students working in the laboratory. So research was a big part of what I saw myself doing. There came a point where the University of South Dakota, where I was before Montana, had a need for a new research officer. And so I saw myself in a position to try to help build the research enterprise at the university there. And so I applied for that job and got into research administration. A little bit further along then, I picked up the dean of the graduate school as a job. And then eventually I saw that the provost position was the one that really had the big picture view of academics at the institution. So I applied for and was able to get the job of provost at my previous institution, and then had the opportunity to move to the University of Montana as provost now 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago. And then obviously about 3 years ago, I had the distinct privilege to become the president. So it was a track that grew out of my faculty interest, really.
Clearly it's satisfying to you, or you wouldn't be in this job. Why do you like it?
I love the job partly because it is so complex. Every day is a new, interesting set of challenges. I get to work with the most wonderful people, most dedicated people in the world, I think, faculty members, staff members, and students, all interested in learning. I'm a perpetual learner myself, and so to be immersed in a learning environment just suits me perfectly.
Speaking of learning, I'm expecting that you didn't expect when you took the presidency that you'd be faced with sort of a serious crisis, if you can call it that, involving athletics, sexual misconduct. That must have involved some learning on your part.
It involved a great deal of learning on my part, and in fact, it is involving a great deal of learning on the part of this nation. Sexual misconduct is a very important issue on college and university campuses around the country. In fact, last week, I was part of a six-president panel on the topic of sexual misconduct on college campuses at the University of Virginia. We all recognize that it is something that happens on college campuses. And while we had a difficult challenge in that area a couple of years ago, I'm quite proud of the way our university responded to that. We jumped in full speed ahead to address that problem head on. I think we've emerged from that now as an institution viewed nationally as a leader in the area. We've put in place many, many strategies to address the issue, and other people are adopting some of our strategies, in fact.
Let's talk about where you see this institution going in the future and how you get there. I framed my opening remarks in terms of a world that's engaged and undergoing acceleratingly rapid transformation. I think we tend to think of higher education as stable institutions teaching classical values and skills. How do you see that interface in broad terms?
First, let me address the question that you had in your opening comments. Is higher education still relevant? Is it still important in today's world? I think higher education is more important than it ever has been, partly because we depend on it to play so many different roles. Certainly in today's kind of pragmatic, economy-focused world in which we live, people look to universities to help drive the economy, whereas we in the past always have played the role of workforce development and providing that educated workforce. More and more, we're now being called upon to actually drive the economy with new ideas and ideas that make their way from the university into the private sector. For example, here at UM, we have this business incubator across the river called Montech, and it is a place where laboratory ideas or ideas from the entertainment studios, the fine arts studios, can make their way into viable businesses. And so that's a role that universities increasingly are playing, and I'm proud to say that we're responding to that role very energetically. But at the same time, we look to our universities to have the traditional role of enlightenment and improving individuals' quality of life through education. You use the word make them have happier lives, and I think that's a very important focus of higher education still. This institution was chartered as the liberal arts-based research university of the state of Montana. That means that regardless of the program, that student has a foundation in the liberal arts. Those are the characteristics that are so important today, things like critical thinking, communications, team problem solving, all of those characteristics that come out of a robust liberal arts-based education are more important than ever in today's world. There was recently a study of company executives, large company executives, and they asked, well, what are the kinds of things you look for in employees? And those are exactly the characteristics, critical thinking, the ability to speak and write and communicate effectively with others, the ability to work with people of different backgrounds than your own on teams to solve problems. Those are exactly the kinds of values that are so prevalent here at UM.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with University of Montana President Royce Engstrom about the continuing relevance of higher education in a rapidly changing world. I picked the words in the introduction, pursuing happiness, because it's in the Declaration of Independence, and obviously it's not a coincidence it's there. The people that wrote that and approved it were Enlightenment-educated people. And one of the issues that is an ongoing question, it seems to me, of balance is how does someone in your position of leadership assure, with the pragmatic pressure that you indicated to have economically relevant education, how do you assure the balance that we're educating civic-minded citizens as well as highly competent commercial entrepreneurial people?
I think that's, in a way, inherent to the nature of the kind of university that we are. The programming that we offer spans a very wide spectrum from, on one end, pretty applied, pretty professionally oriented, but again, at its core, this education that focuses on who we are as human beings, who we have been as human beings from the beginning of civilization. We want all of our students to complete a broad general education curriculum that makes sure that they spend time thinking about literature and the arts and science and quantitative aspects of what they do. So that broad-based curriculum at the core of who we are helps us ensure that we meet that whole spectrum of expectations the public has of a liberal arts-based university.
Some of our listeners probably heard the show we did last year on your Global Leadership Initiative program. But in case they didn't, I'm going to ask you to summarize it. But let me just say, as a citizen, I was really impressed with the quality of the faculty and the quality of the students that we interviewed. Why don't you summarize what that's about?
A few years ago, members from the faculty started a really in-depth discussion on the question of what should education look like in today's world. And so over the course of a few years, that evolved into what we now call the Global Leadership Initiative, which we think embodies the spirit of the University of Montana. And so its purpose is to graduate students who see themselves as leaders or becoming leaders and see themselves as effective problem-solving citizens of today's world, of this global society in which we live. So the Global Leadership Initiative is structured around four components, roughly oriented with the 4 years of an undergraduate baccalaureate educational program. The students take these components in parallel to whatever major they decide to study. So at the freshman level, they take interdisciplinary seminars on the big questions before us as a global society. As sophomores, they're in a leadership development program where we call upon leaders, mostly from our alumni base, to come in and talk with those students about leadership issues before them and so on. The third year, we want those students to get beyond the classroom. They do a study abroad program, maybe an internship with a company or an agency. And then finally, as seniors, they have a capstone experience, really kind of a boardroom experience where they're in the room with 10 or 15 other students of different backgrounds. Together, they design a specific question to investigate. They work on that question during the course of the semester and then put out a work product related to that question. That product might be a policy paper or a business plan, for example, but something where, as a group, they've tackled some really tough problem and brought forth a constructive solution to that problem.
The thing that struck me as I was listening to them talk, in addition to their clear interest and energized focus, was that by definition, Global Leadership Initiative, as they outlined it, involved not just the developing of technical expertise, but what I will call cross-cultural sensitivity, perceptiveness, effectiveness, because that's what global is. It's more than just our way of seeing things. Fair?
Yes. In fact, I think if I were to use one word to define what we mean by global, it would be connectedness. What we want to do is have these students graduate realizing that what goes on right here in Missoula, Montana, is either affected by or has implications to things that happen around the world. Global doesn't simply mean international, but it does mean that things are connected and we need our students to graduate with a bit broader view than we had before. When I was talking earlier about my own chemistry education, I graduated from college pretty much thinking chemistry could solve anything. Well, I've certainly matured from that and realized that the issues before us and the opportunities before us are complex, and you need the economists, you need philosophers, you need educators, you need business people, and so on. These are very complex issues, and so hopefully the Global Leadership Initiative will give our students that kind of experience.
So in addition to GLI, what are other initiatives that you think fit the definitions that you've outlined of the role of your university?
So we had another group of faculty just in this last year begin the conversation about where we need to go academically in today's world. What kinds of programs, what sorts of emphases do we need to be thinking more deeply about at the University of Montana? And they did their work around three themes. So the first one of those themes really was the theme interdisciplinary. We need more opportunities for our students to experience interdisciplinary work. And so a good example of that on this campus is the recent launch of what we're calling the Brain Initiative. The human brain, you know, is just a fascinating organ, and at UM we have people thinking about the human brain in so many different areas, ranging from very fundamental hard science all the way to how the brain responds to creativity, how the brain develops in young people to where they start learning and developing their cognitive processes, and even how we can restore brain function in the event of injury. Hmm. There are two fascinating things about that particular aspect that are very timely. We will have before the Board of Regents in March a proposal for final action on the Neural Injury Center out of our College of Health Professions and Biomedical Sciences, a center to help veterans, in this case, reestablish full neural function after a brain injury. Along the same lines, we were just recognized as one of 16 entities in the nation by the National Football League to study brain injury and recovery associated with athletic injuries. So this is an area of very active research and education on this campus, and it spans many different colleges. So that's one good example of how interdisciplinary education and research is becoming more and more important to us all the time.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with University of Montana President Royce Engstrom about the relevance of a university education in our rapidly changing world. In preparation for the show, your staff kindly provided me with some of the programs you're involved with, and one of the things that struck me was what I will call outreach to elements of the community where there's a collaborative interface. Kind of a surprise to me, thinking of the university as a standalone, perhaps insular institution. Can you give us some of your thinking and examples?
I think in this global century, Brian, it's increasingly important for universities to connect with their respective communities, whether that community we think of as right here in Missoula, around the state of Montana, or around the globe. The interactions between universities and their respective communities is ever more important. One interesting way that we are doing that here is interacting with the business community in the local area, in the area of information technology and what we might call cyber innovation. IT is a dramatically growing area continually in our country, in our world. And as it turns out, Missoula is quite the hub of IT startups. I don't know if you saw recently, we were recognized as number 5 in the nation for the number of IT startups in the small city category. So not too long ago, we held a business roundtable discussion focused on IT. We had tremendous turnout from people in the Missoula area. They were very helpful in talking to us about the kind of IT education our students might need moving forward, and what kind of research should we be doing in a collaborative sense with them in the private sector. So some very interesting things have come out of that already. One, we have just put in place a new certificate program in the area of cybersecurity. So now a student can take 4 courses and add this certificate really on top of any other major they want to, focusing on keeping their organizations and as individuals, keeping themselves safe in our cyber world.
Safe in the sense from hacking or intrusive inspections?
Exactly, right. How do we prevent hacking? How do we maintain the integrity of our databases? Mm. How do we protect the identity of people and so on? That same group of private sector folks have helped us build a cyber innovation laboratory. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had a little ceremony in our interdisciplinary sciences building opening up this cyber innovation laboratory where our students will be able to go and experiment in a cyber sense, both innovation and security sense. So that's a good example of where the university and the private sector are working more closely all the time. Another great example here is our Missoula College, our two-year college, which, as you know, the legislature very generously provided funding for in the last session. And so we made the decision to place the Missoula College in a physical location that really kind of literally bridges the gap between the university and the business community of Missoula. So that building, that physical building, will be located right next to our business incubator center, Montec, across from the main campus. The idea being that we want to engage our business community ever more in academic programming, making sure that there's good two-way communication there about what the business community needs from our two-year college and what we can provide them.
We recently did a show with the University of Montana Helena College, and I was frankly very impressed with the quality of the faculty, the diversity of curricula, and the relevance that the teaching had to the students' lives, the students we interviewed. It was really hands-on and frankly inspiring. How do you see the relative relationship of the two-year programs to the four-year programs?
This, again, is a reflection of the fairly broad expectations that our society has of higher education. They want higher education to provide the kinds of programs that put people quite directly into the workforce. Our two-year colleges really do that full on. That's in a large measure their specialty. So programs like nursing or surgical technology or computer design or welding, those sorts mm-hmm. of things that really prepare people for a specific job. All the way on up through this broad-based undergraduate education we talked about earlier, but also graduate education, both in the sense of professional programs, say like physical therapy or communication science and disorders, but also the research-based graduate programs, things like research in biology or history or whatever discipline or interdisciplinary field you might have. So we have a broad-ranging responsibility, but the two-year programs in Montana are integral to that. One of the strengths of the Montana University system is that we provide quite a wide range of learning environments for the citizens of Montana. So a student who is very focused on getting into the workplace right away has the option of going to Helena College or the Highlands College in Butte or Missoula College here. A student interested in, again, the liberal arts baccalaureate program has the University of Montana, Missoula, to look for his or her education. We have Montana Tech that's very science and engineering focused. We have UM Western that has this very distinctive experience one format where the students mm-hmm. take one course at a time. So students in Montana have some great choices before them, and they can get the kind of education they want. And very important in today's world, they can get that education for as affordable of a cost as just about anywhere in our country.
As you discussed the relationship of the university to the local business community and statewide business community and synergistic relationships there, I was reminded there was an article recently in the New York Times of a dispute in Canada about the role of universities historically doing primary research and concern among some people that through economic pressures and rewards, they were becoming more of a one-stop concierge service, really an offshoot of industry, getting too close. Any thoughts about that as president of this university?
That has been kind of an age-old question at universities. How closely do we get to the private sector? Are we driven by the needs of the private sector? And, you know, depending on the time in our country's history, that question has moved one way or another. The fact is, universities have a responsibility to cover the spectrum again. I use that word spectrum because I like to think of questions like the one you just put before me as not an either or, but we have to address those issues in a continuous kind of a way. So you will find on this campus and just about every other research university campus what we think of as very basic research, research that maybe doesn't have any particular direction or particular application to it right now, all the way to very applied research, things that are being done with the idea of trying to solve a specific problem that's before us right today. And we need to have both of those. One reason is that today's basic research may become tomorrow's application. Let me give you a good example, not necessarily from this institution, but just in general. In the 40s and 50s, the science community in chemistry and physics were looking at very fundamental basic questions about how protons interacted in a magnetic environment. Well, that sounds pretty esoteric, but now that is the basis for magnetic resonance imaging that is a standard tool in today's medical field. So oftentimes, things that we're studying today, we don't know what the application may be, but it forms the underlying foundation, intellectual foundation, for something that becomes very important to us as a society down the road.
In my introduction, I raised the question of the benefits of higher education to the community, state, and nation. Taxpayers are funding this educational process. It's expensive. There's been a trend toward cutting back of thinking that the individual is the beneficiary of higher education, so he or she should pay for it. What do you say to that, to citizens, state legislatures, members of our federal representatives?
Brian, it is absolutely clear to me that both the individuals and our communities, our society, benefit immeasurably from higher education. Just in a very practical sense, the individual who graduates from college with a bachelor's degree is still earning $1 million more over his or her lifetime than somebody who didn't go to college. Far beyond the monetary aspects of things, those individuals lead richer lives. They are, using your earlier word, I believe, happier. They are very much more active as citizens and so on. But the collective work of those individuals really is what makes up our society. And our society, whether you think of it from an economic point of view or whether you think of it from a quality of life point of view, higher education takes our societies to levels they just would never approach without higher education. Money aside, when you think of sitting down and listening to the symphony that comes to this campus, or taking a walk through our wonderful art collection, or stopping downtown at the Spectrum Science Museum, those are things that benefit our community, our society in tremendous ways, and they simply wouldn't be here without higher education.
Roy Sangstrom, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studio. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.